Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Today we're going to start another series of interviews, and I'm very excited about it, mostly because 30 years ago I couldn't imagine doing these interviews. The topic is going to be research in Reiki. So 30 years ago, when people asked me about doing research projects with Reiki, I couldn't imagine it. And it took me back to the days when I was in psychology in my undergraduate work. And, in the early 1970s, psychology really wanted to be a science, an empirical science. And so, you know, our whole thrust when we were in psychology was not on behavior or how human beings work, was mostly on rats experiments, and I even had to take 2 years of statistics, which was a bit of a struggle for me. And in the end, my statistics professor said, please, please don't ever use this for anything unless you take another course and do very well in it, because your mind just doesn't work here. So I begged him a passing grade so I can get my degree, and that was sort of my viewpoint about experimental psychology. But evidently it did me in fairly good stead, because I was able to read some case studies that some writing that Anne Baldwin has done and actually make some kind of sense in it, and I had some background, so that was good. You know, in the beginning, I felt like people wanted to do research to prove that Reiki existed. And I think that was perhaps my projection or my paranoia. You can take your pick, which one. And today, in talking with Anne, I realized that there are other motivations and perhaps also, surprisingly, benefits to us as Reiki students and Reiki practitioners. So I'm very happy to say that I was led to meeting Anne Baldwin. She's originally English, so you'll notice that lilt in her voice. And she lives here in Tucson, which is very close to me, and I'm really grateful for this, because it means that I not only get to interview her, but I get to continue our relationship and hopefully it be a fruitful one in the next years. Anne has so much material, and it's such a, I hope, interesting topic for you, that we're going to do 2 shows in a row. This first show is going to be more general, and more about her personal life with Reiki, and the second show will be more specifically about the experiments that she did. Now, try not to flinch about the second program, because I find it quite interesting, and I know that you will too. It may raise your eyebrows, it may set up a lot of questions for you, but that's exactly, I think, where we could be right now in our stage of development, not only as Reiki students, but also as a world community of Reiki practitioners. You know, we'd like to think that somehow, sometimes we have a better understanding of the human body than physicians do, or that somehow we have a one-upmanship. But, you know, these days for me, there is a desire, and especially, of course, in my own situation, a desire to have cooperation, compatibility, and complement each other. And now what I would like to do is to bring in the side of science, quote-unquote, that has to do with research, which is a totally another opening, not only perhaps for you, but also for me. So luckily we have Anne, and she's going to be a great entryway for us all. So Anne, please, thank you very much for being willing to be with us here on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm really happy to be able to talk about science and Reiki.
Great. Wonderful. Well, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about how you met Reiki and in what context?
Yes, I was a full professor at the University of Arizona in physiology, and I was working on rats. I was interested in the effects of inflammation on the small blood vessels on the in the intestine. So these are called microvessels, and they're responsible for transporting nutrients between blood and tissue, and also transporting the waste products away from the tissue into the blood. And inflammation kind of messes up that process. So I was looking at what happens cellularly, cell by cell, when you have inflammation, what happens to this transport process. And I needed someone to help me analyze data. I was getting a lot of data, and I needed some help. So I put an ad in the university newspaper looking for a technician to help me analyze the data. And the first person who came for an interview was a woman, and she was actually English, but she was in Tucson because her husband had a job at the U of A. So she seemed very promising, so I hired her. And her parents were from India, and so she had the background of kind of Eastern philosophies. So she was trained in Reiki. I think at that time she was level 2. And she was started off just analyzing the data and working in the lab. And then she told me about her Reiki. And she was a very persistent lady. And she really thought that I needed to know more about Reiki, even though I was a scientist. I'd never heard of Reiki before.
So what year was this?
This was about
1999. Great.
Anyway, so she asked me if I'd like to try Reiki. So I said, okay. And so I sat down in the lab next to the microscope, like between the microscope and the balance, and she gave me some Reiki while I was sitting on the chair. And I felt very relaxed, and I felt a little bit of heat and some tingling, and I just thought it felt quite nice.
Great. And then?
And then, she didn't want to just stop there. She wanted my whole lab to be introduced into Reiki.
Amazing. So did she treat people then in your lab? Or?
No, she didn't treat us. She just wanted us to experience it. So I had students and a postdoc and a technician, and she gave us all Reiki so that we could see what it felt like. And that was just stage one. And then stage two was a bit later on. She thought that it would be good if we all did a workshop with her for being attuned to Reiki level 1.
Uh-huh. So by this time she had become a master.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you took the class?
Yes, all of us in the lab went to her house.
That's great. Well, what was the effect of your work together having been initiated into Reiki?
Well, then stage 3 began.
And uh-huh.
Stage 3 was involving Reiki in our experiments.
Uh-huh. Wow. So you put Reiki into the experiments that you were doing for Reiki, or you were doing for your study of microvascular disorder?
For the study of the inflammation in the microvasculature, uh-huh. We were going to use Reiki. But we needed to get funds for these experiments. You can't just do extra experiments because they cost a lot to do.
Right.
And so we needed to get some more funds. And so she said, oh, well, we'll just write a grant for the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, and see if we can get some money to do these experiments with Reiki. And our plan was to use Reiki on the rats to reduce their inflammation. A long time ago, I discovered that the rats in our animal facility, and in fact I later found out in many animal facilities, were stressed from the noisy conditions in most animal facilities.
Uh-huh.
People coming in and out, shutting doors, banging doors, jangling keys, all the machinery down there, the ventilators, the right. washing machines, everything makes a lot of noise. And there isn't very much material to absorb the noise.
Right, and because it's mostly concrete boxes.
Yeah, and so yeah. I discovered that the rats were actually stressed.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, during the day, they sleep because they're nocturnal, and people didn't realize they were stressed. Only I went in at night with a video camera, and I couldn't believe what I saw. The rats were housed in pairs in cages, and they were basically boxing each other at night. They were biting and screaming.
Wow.
And then I did some experiments where I gave them some enrichment things to do, such as a tunnel and a shelf, and that completely disappeared. They were fine. So they were stressed. And in other experiments, I found that the noise was causing the stress.
Uh-huh. Wow, interesting. So has that changed at all, people's care for these animals?
Well, yes. Now, at least in our animal facility, every investigator is supposed to include a tunnel in the cage so that at least they have something to climb on or snuggle into.
Uh-huh.
And also now they take more care about reducing noise levels.
Well, it's interesting. Well, I have a question for you. I don't know if we're going to go off on some kind of tangent, but so if this kind of noise, which I can totally imagine rats are nocturnal, but also whether we can imagine it or not, the way they live is pretty quiet because they choose their burrows or wherever they are, and they're away from this kind of very abrupt, sharp sounds. So when we go to the hospital and we have all these noises and so on, does that correlate at all with human beings?
Oh, definitely. In fact, I saw a study, and they found that hospitals are one of the noisiest places.
Right.
And that
I think we've all experienced
yes,
that.
And that is going to reduce your chances of healing well and quickly, for sure. I found with the rats that when they were in the noisy situation, they had inflammation in the intestine, and we've all heard of inflammatory bowel disease and
right.
how it can be induced by stress.
Right.
And in the intestine, there are these little immune cells called mast cells.
Uh-huh.
And I found that when they were in the noisy situation, the mast cells would explode, degranulate, release all kinds of chemicals into the tissue that would cause damage to the intestine, the intestinal cells. The lining of the intestine was actually being damaged.
Wow.
And that's where we thought the Reiki would come in.
Uh-huh.
If we give these animals Reiki, does it reduce that damage?
Uh-huh.
And that's
and?
What we applied for
uh-huh.
to do.
Wow. Great.
And believe it or not, we got the money.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Good for the NIH.
NIH.
Right. Right. Great. Well, we'll hear more about this later. So when you, after you started to apply Reiki into your experiments, then you took second degree, because on the studies that I read, you were using second degree Reiki, a distant treatment rather
yes.
than hands-on.
Yes, by that time I was second degree.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
also the student who worked with me was also second degree.
Uh-huh. Great. And then you went on to become a master?
I did, yes.
Uh-huh. With her, this woman that
no,
was in
by
the
that
lab?
Time, she had moved. But,
she'd done her job
yes.
in introducing you to Reiki.
Yes.
And then?
Well, then I decided, well, actually, let's go back a step.
Okay.
When I was level one, I was still a bit not quite believing Reiki. I mean, I could feel it was causing me to relax and causing tingling sensations, but I didn't really know whether it was actually doing anything. This was before we did the animals. I have a horse, so I would try out my Reiki on my horse at the barn. And I had a friend who had a horse there. And one day she came up to me and she said, "Oh, my poor horse, he's got these bug bites on his shoulders." And I said, "Oh, let me see if the Reiki will help." So I went to the horse, and I held my hands just about an inch above his shoulders and started the Reiki, and I could see these lumps under the skin. And then, before my eyes, I could see the lumps gradually getting smaller and smaller. And at first, I didn't believe it. I thought maybe I was imagining it. So I didn't say anything. And then my friend said, "Oh, the lumps are going." And it was just things like that, and gradually accumulating these experiences that made me think that, yes, there is something going on. And that's what made me decide to take Reiki 2 and really be serious about doing the experiments with the rats. And then later on, of course, I got more interested. I wanted to expand my horizons in Reiki, do more training, and that's when I did the master's level.
So do you teach? Do you teach? And
I do teach. Yes, I really enjoy giving Reiki workshops and attunements. I do that quite frequently.
Great. Well, it's wonderful to meet you and know that you're here in Tucson and that we can connect and get together more often. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. So you got led into doing research with Reiki rather than research in Reiki. I would say that's a kind of a difference, because sometimes people come to a research project wanting the motivation more focused on Reiki rather than focused on another outcome. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. I was using Reiki as a tool. I was just wondering if this Reiki tool would help.
Right. And for you listeners, later on in the month of July, we're going to have another interview with a German woman named Angela, and she and a Czech researcher have been doing research more focused on Reiki and the nature of Reiki as an energy, which is interesting in and of itself. So when we talk about research, I know that there are basically two different kinds of research, qualitative and quantitative. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the difference between those, Anne?
Yes. Qualitative is when your outcomes are not easily measured. You can't give a number to it. So, for example, you can say to somebody after they've received a Reiki session, "How calm do you feel on a scale of 1 to 5? And that's kind of qualitative, because it's not like you have a machine and it takes a measurement of how calm you feel.
Right.
So it has some subjectivity involved in that.
Yeah.
So that's really what qualitative is. Whereas quantitative, you have precise measures. And that's why for physiology, applying physiology to Reiki is really good, because it's easy to make precise measures of physiological changes that occur after someone has received Reiki.
So how did you make these quantitative? Mm-hmm. How did you make these quantitative measurements in the rats?
Okay, so in the rats, the first experiment we did was we wanted to know whether the blood vessels in the intestine were inflamed, because that's what was happening with the noise. And to do that, we injected the animals with a fluorescent protein, albumin, which is normally in the blood anyway, but we just had a fluorescent tag on it so that we could see where it was going. And we were able to measure how much it was leaking out of the blood vessels, because the blood vessels were so inflamed by the noise, it actually became leaky to protein.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And normally these particular blood vessels keep the proteins in.
Right. So then the protein wasn't being absorbed by the blood system.
Yeah, it wasn't staying in the circulation. It was leaking out, and it shouldn't have been doing that.
Right. So where does it go when it leaks? I know this is kind of a weird question,
yeah,
but
yeah,
I have
that's
this.
That's a very good question.
I have this visual that's kind of weird, so I just want to check.
Well, it goes into the tissue, and then it gradually drains into another set of vessels that are called lymphatics,
right,
or drainage vessels.
Right.
And those lymphatics drain all the stuff that comes out of the circulation, including water, because water obviously leaks out of the blood vessels too,
right.
It's supposed to. And you have to. So you need the lymphatic vessels to soak up all the water, and then eventually it gets dumped back into the blood again.
Right.
So it soaks up the water and all the proteins that have leached out.
Uh-huh.
So eventually they get back in there.
Uh-huh. And rats have lymphatic systems?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. We didn't study that in biology. We only studied the very basic digestive system, circulatory
right.
system, and so on.
But with the fluorescent proteins, we were able to look at the rat intestine under the microscope and videotape it, and then later we could analyze those videotapes and actually measure how much leakage there was.
Uh-huh. That's amazing. Well, there must be some really wonderful machinery that you're working with all this.
Oh, yes. Now I'm working with humans, and I'm using... I'm very interested in what Reiki does to the heart rhythm.
Uh-huh.
So there are sensors you can use to measure heart rate and how heart rate changes with time, or heart rate variability.
Uh-huh.
So I'm doing that. And also I have a machine which actually scans the hand with a weak laser beam.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you an image of the blood flow in the hand. So I'm able to measure changes in blood flow in the hands and the fingers, which is obviously relevant to Reiki.
Wow. So do you have a theory, and I use the word theory pointedly, do you have a theory for this tingling and warm sensation that we normally get, or people normally get when they are practicing Reiki?
Yes, I've shown, and several other people have shown as well, that when you give and when you receive Reiki, you're put into a very relaxed state.
Uh-huh.
So your heart rate is reduced, your blood pressure is reduced, and your blood vessels in the extremes, like in the fingers and toes, dilate, they relax and dilate, so more blood goes in there.
Uh-huh.
And so that accounts for the extra heat that you get in your hands.
Uh-huh.
The tingling, that's another story. I really don't know, really can't explain the tingling. Obviously, it's some kind of nervous stimulation.
But that in and of itself would be an interesting experience, you know, somehow to arrive at some kind of experience. Do you feel that it's... well, you don't know, but you must have thought about it.
Oh, yes. I'm always amazed when you say to people who only received Reiki for the first time, how do you feel? It doesn't matter who they are. Most of them say warm or tingling, one or the other.
Yeah.
And so it seems to me obvious that with the tingling, there is something that must be going on that we ought to be able to measure.
Right, physiologically.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I've always thought that maybe it was... just our nerves being stimulated. My grandmother used to say to people, especially the students who would say to her, well, I don't feel any heat. I don't feel any tingling. And she would say, well, it doesn't matter. Reiki is still flowing. But the sensations just are saying, Reiki is here, which I really loved. It was so simple. And it allowed people to have both experiences without feeling like one was better than the other.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. So it kind of implied that if you didn't feel it, then maybe you didn't need to feel it. So that in and of itself would be another interesting question for me. Why do most people feel it? And then why is it that there are other people who don't ever haven't ever felt it?
That is a very interesting question. I haven't thought of that before. And I think most people do require some kind of sensation. They need some feedback.
Yeah.
Otherwise they just think, oh, I'm hopeless. It's just not working. I'm no good at it. And then they give up. And I think that's why Reiki does need to give us some sensations.
Right.
Whereas perhaps there are some people who don't need that feedback. Maybe they're very confident.
Right. Well, it's interesting because one case in particular, unfortunately this woman has since passed on, but she was a Reiki master that my grandmother initiated in all first and second degree and also as a master. And she was before she was initiated, definitely a very special person. I mean, people came to her for advice, and sometimes she had spontaneous healings and so on. I mean, she's a very, very interesting person and lived in the little wood house in the woods. It was, you know, her family called her the resident witch. And her name was Barbara Brown, and she was a really, really special person. And she didn't have sensations in her hands. And yet, if you received a Reiki treatment from her, you could feel the warmth, and you could feel the tingling yourself, but she couldn't.
That's interesting, because maybe her feedback was through the people she was healing rather than through her own sensations.
Yes, maybe so. I mean, it's just a fascinating process, because the people that I have known who haven't had sensation have been very effective healers. Mm. So, I mean, I don't know if that's true, and it would be interesting to just take a little survey of people like that.
Also, it would be fascinating to make measurements on people who sense and people who don't have the sensations,
yeah,
and measure changes in blood flow in their hands.
Yes, and see if there's any difference.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And it would be fascinating if the people who are not feeling anything do get the increased blood flow, but they're just not feeling it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, well, there are lots of stimulations I see in your mind, and I'm hoping that they'll get met. So, you know, for me, who has been a little leery of research in Reiki, I can see now that there are lots of different avenues to approach, so that, not to prove it that it exists, but just to somehow have a bridge between our physiological body and the actual natural phenomena of our physical body, the miracle of how we work, mm-hmm, which is just incredible. Day by day, I always have more incredulous feelings about how we were put together and how whoever thought about putting us together and how it made it all work. I don't, mm-hmm, really understand that. That's one of our great mysteries, of course. But I can see that it could be a very exciting kind of domino effect. Well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this?
Oh, that's what science does. You answer one question and opens up 10 more.
And that for me is a really different understanding of science. I think that I'll be 62 this year, and I think that when I went to school, somehow I got this idea that science wanted to find the finite answer, like the definitive answer, and that's where learning stopped, and that's kind of where the end-all be-all was. And I don't know where I got that. Obviously, it's not true. And it's kind of a false premise. So I'm really glad to kind of just let this go and be able to be more open to this process that I have found in Reiki. And what I found so refreshing in Reiki was that, for instance, working with the precepts, you know, just for today, do not anger. I have one question, and once that question is revealed to me, or a response is revealed, then there are 10 more questions. And I always felt that to be fairly miraculous, because it keeps widening my ability to hold the universe and to hold us as human beings. So I assume that that's the same thing you're talking about, the same process.
Exactly. Oh, yes.
Exactly. Wow.
In fact, I was interested about what you were saying at school, that there seems to be, you had to search for one finite answer in science. Whereas when I was at school, and maybe that's why I went into science, we had much more fun. It was more open-ended, the kind of science we did. We weren't looking for one finite answer necessarily. We were just doing experiments to answer a question, and we didn't even know what the answer would be, and it could be anything.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, as I remember, it's interesting, it's wonderful that you had a different experience. because now we get to talk to each other. And this is a little healing for me in this process, but I realized that though my physics teacher, and he also taught chemistry in high school, and my mathematics teacher were both very kind to me, I realized that in my own mindset, from my perspective, that's what they wanted, was the right answer. So, you know, I had to do this experiment correctly in order to get the right answer. I never felt like, from my perspective, that I had the freedom to do the experiment and then have any answer, and any answer would be an interesting adjunct to the next answer or the next experiment. So, obviously, this was somehow how my whole cosmology of the world was at that time, and I can let that go now. That's good. Great. So, in these experiments, and if we could somehow access money to keep on these experiments and this bridge between physiology and science and how we feel and what if we feel as we give Reiki and what's actually happening. What would you say the benefit would be to us just as Reiki students or to the Reiki community in general?
Well, one benefit is that we will understand Reiki better. We'll know what it's doing to us and how it's doing it. And I think it's very important that we learn more about what Reiki is and how it's working.
Uh-huh.
And what are the mechanisms by which it has its effect on us? So both physiologically, I think it's interesting physiologically to see what Reiki is doing to us. And also, I'm a physicist too. My first degree was in physics. I'm really interested in it. I'd love to see the energy and measure the energy when people are doing Reiki. And a wonderful experiment would be to measure energy coming from someone's hands before they have an attunement and after the attunement. And there are instruments called SQUID, superconducting quantum interference detectors. They are very, very sensitive instruments that measure weak electromagnetic fields. And I've made some preliminary measurements using one of these devices. I had to fly to Madison. There was a doctor there who kindly let me use his machine for a morning and help me do those measurements, which was very great, very generous of him. And in the 80s, another person, Dr. Zimmerman, also made measurements when people were doing Reiki. And he could measure the energy coming from their hands. And he found that the energy was sweeping through a whole range of frequencies. So one question is, why is the Reiki energy sweeping through a whole range of frequencies? Why isn't it just, you know, giving all the frequencies at once, or just giving one frequency? And so by doing these experiments, we have more and more questions to ask. We can learn how Reiki is doing what it's doing.
Uh-huh. So just to go back, I'm just curious about this. Like, I get a visual of when you say sweeping through all these
frequencies.
So can you talk to me a little bit more about that? That was interesting.
Yes.
And I don't know if I quite get it.
Yeah. Well, energy is vibration. Everything's vibrating. Everything has energy. So this chair I'm sitting on is energy.
Uh-huh.
And although we can't see it, this chair is just vibrating. All the molecules in the chair. And things vibrate at a certain frequency. Mm-hmm. So if something is vibrating slowly, that's going to be a low frequency. And if it's moving very, very quickly, that's going to be a faster, higher frequency. So energy has frequency. The higher the frequency, usually the more energetic the energy is.
Right.
And so what I'm saying when I say that the energy seems to be sweeping through a whole range of frequencies was that the energy coming from the hand, its vibrations were changing. So maybe first the energy would have low vibrations, then they'd go to a quicker vibration, then quicker, and then they'd go back to low vibrations again. And a theory has been put forward that each organ in the body, and each system in the body, has its own particular frequency or vibration that it works best at.
Mm-hmm.
And if an organ is not working right, say you have bad kidneys or bad lungs or something like that, then the theory is that the organ has shifted to a slightly different frequency, which isn't its optimal frequency of vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps when Reiki is given, because the Reiki is going through these different frequencies, it will get to the one that the organ needs, and the organ will resonate with it and come back to its normal frequency at which it works best.
So that might explain the phenomena of when you reach a certain part of the body in a person, and not necessarily where the pain is, and not necessarily where you think the healing, whatever that means, needs to be done. But there, you get to a certain part of the body, and then your hands kind of get stuck. And there's a lot of heat, and a lot of, well, you could say resonance, because it creates a kind of, well, we wouldn't want to, I guess the only word I can say in the, my real world is vacuum. That's like this vacuum where, not that it's a hole, particularly, but that my hands get stuck there, like if you put your hand over the end of a vacuum cleaner. There's no way to lift it off until the resonance, or until that, that somehow gets filled, and then it's finished. So you can stay there for hours sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing.
Yes, so that would be consistent with waiting until the area comes back into its own optimal frequency.
I can remember once when I was a very young master, I was very into, well, a little bit consciously, but more subconsciously, proving Reiki to people. So I had gone to Iowa to do a class through a church group, which was really interesting. I can't remember what the name of the church was now, but this woman really wanted to have a series of Reiki treatments from me. So I gave her a Reiki treatment, and we did it on her bed. And I sat on a little, like, bench from a what do you call them? Those little tables where you put all your makeup and jewelry and...
Oh, like a dressing table.
Like a dressing table, right. So, you know, these things are not comfortable, usually. They're very hard. So I'm sitting there on this thing with my hands, and I put my hands over her eyes, and for 2 hours, I was there. And my bum, I mean, I couldn't move. My bum was, like, just screaming for Reiki, of course, or to move anyway. And finally, after about 2.5 hours, I finally could move my hands. And I then, of course, I didn't know what to do, because I had told her that this treatment would last an hour, right? And here we are, you know, an hour and a half later than I thought. And I said, would you like me to continue? And she said, yes. So I fairly quickly moved through the rest of the positions. And some really amazing things happened with her sight. But more amazingly, there were other parts of her body that felt like they had received the energy through her eyes somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good learning experience for me. And the next treatment that I gave her, her eyes appeared to be normal. Like I just stayed for the usual length of time.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any major draw or anything, and then I did a regular treatment on her, and she said, well, that was really different. And I said, it was very different than yesterday. And she also got to experience what some people call the intelligence of Reiki. But I have to say that I don't like this phrase particularly, because it reduces, I feel like it reduces Reiki to a human state, where I feel Reiki is actually more than what we can imagine. So whatever it's doing, it feels like it's intelligent for us because it's doing what it needs to do.
Mm.
But in fact, it's teaching us what intelligence is.
That's so true. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of doing Reiki with animals.
Uh-huh.
I do Reiki with horses and cats and dogs.
Uh-huh.
And they already know about Reiki.
Yeah.
And they're very sensitive.
Yeah. So can you say more about that?
Yes. So when you give Reiki to most horses, not all, but most of them, they all show the same response. First, they will put their heads down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do when they relax. They close their eyes. They sigh, let out a big sigh.
Yes.
And they just look so relaxed. And as soon as they've had enough, they let you know. They tell you. Maybe they'll walk away or move. And also they'll tell you if they don't want it too.
Yes.
So they seem to be already aware of Reiki and aware of how it can do them good. And when they've had enough. And I think one reason is that animals can't speak and their heads are not full of all the noise and information and thoughts that ours are, and perhaps they have enough space there to take in other forms of communication, non-verbal communication.
Uh-huh.
And I think Reiki is one of these non-verbal forms of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And they are like antennae, ready to take it in, whereas for us we have to get into a special state where we're more receptive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't come naturally to most people. Most people have to be taught Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And some don't, but most people do. Whereas animals, they all know about it.
Right, right. Well, you know, one of the things that I find quite fascinating is that we might, as I used to co-own a horse, and the horse had an injury on one of its shoulder from the way that it was used before we became its owner. And he would take Reiki up to a certain point, and often we had more time. So our idea was, well, the more the better. But his idea was, I've had enough for now. And then there were other times when it felt like he would have liked more, but we didn't have more time, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting play, because what I realized was perhaps there was a process going on within him that he could monitor by physiological, I mean, I don't know how he felt, but by physiological changes that were happening with him, and that and it gave me the understanding that sometimes my intellect and what I think might be the best is actually not what my body wants.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this very interesting time. Well, I can't go into the detail, but there was this interesting situation where I just got that if I separated the idea of what I thought was best with what my body felt was best, that might be the best for me.
Yeah. I have another story, another horse story.
Okay,
that reminds me of it. I volunteered for Trot Therapeutic Riding of Tucson.
Uh-huh.
And I was there one day, and somebody told me one of the horses couldn't be used because he was lame, one of his front feet strained. And so I thought, maybe he'll want some Reiki. So I went into his store, and I stood by the fence, and I started running Reiki energy to see if he was wanting it. And he came up to me, and so I took that as a yes. And so I felt the energy field of one front leg and then the other front leg. And on the left front leg felt normal, it followed the contours of his leg, and the other one, the energy field had this big lump, this big ball down at the bottom. So I thought, okay, maybe this is the one that's lame. And I could feel some heat as well. So I started doing Reiki. I was squatting down by his side, by the side of his legs, and doing Reiki on the one that I thought was lame.
Uh-huh.
And he was pleased with that. He seemed to be enjoying that. And then I went over to the other leg and did some Reiki there for a little while to balance things up. Then I went back to the first leg again, started doing the Reiki, and he put his nose down and gently pushed me off balance so I fell on the floor because I'd been squatting. So then I went back to his leg and I felt the energy field on that leg, the main one, and I didn't feel that ball of that big ball at the bottom anymore. It felt more normal.
Wow.
So I took that as a sign that he had enough Reiki, he'd done its job. And then the next day I heard the vet had gone to see the horse and he said the horse was ready to go back to work.
Wow. Great. Wonderful.
So that they can tell us.
Yes,
and
definitely.
And that's what I mean about that the animals are more intelligent than we are with respect to Reiki and knowing when they've had enough.
Right.
And knowing what's going on.
Right, right. Great. Well, back to our experiments then. How did the rats receive the Reiki when you were giving them Reiki? And you were doing this at a distance. You weren't touching them.
No, we weren't touching them. We were level two at that time. And we were sitting near the cages. They were housed two per cage. So we would sit by each cage 15 minutes and just raise our hands so our palms were facing the cage,
uh-huh.
and then just sit there and run energy
uh-huh.
with our hands directed towards the cage, just maybe a couple of feet away.
So did they relax and away? Could you notice a like a dance or a body posture or something?
Oh yes, they just went to sleep.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
And the other thing was, when the rats were stressed, we noticed they had reddening on the backs of their necks and sometimes around the eyes. And the ones that received Reiki didn't show that.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. So the Reiki was definitely relieving their stress symptoms.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Outside and inside.
Uh-huh. Great. So I think that I'm going to ask you this question, but I don't want you to take offense at it. I just know that this is going to be a question in some people's minds who are listening. And also, not really in my mind, but it came up, so it must be there somewhere. So how do you, as a researcher, balance this process between using animals in experiments? I'm sorry, you know this is coming, right? And this whole thing about Reiki and, you know, honoring all life forces and so on. And I guess a part of me could answer that question for myself, but I'd love to hear it from you. And I'm not asking you this to be provocative, but I'm asking you this and sincerely.
Yes, I quite agree. I thought about this a lot, obviously. And I'm very concerned about animals used in research. I do think that there is a place for animals to be used in research, but the experiments have to be valid experiments. We have to be doing experiments on animals that are living full, normal lives,
uh-huh.
rather than animals that are basically squashed into isolated prison cells. It's like doing experiments on prisoners who are in isolation or, you know, have very little to do and expecting to apply the results of those experiments to
uh-huh.
people having normal lives.
Uh-huh.
So if we're going to do experiments on animals, we have to arrange it so that they have as normal lives as possible. And that it's possible to do that. It would take a big change, but it is possible to do that.
Uh-huh.
And so if that's the case, then I think that the data that you get from the animals and the knowledge you get from the animals, I think that it's worth it in that case, but not if you're just mindlessly using animals for research without really thinking about how valid are these experiments. What are we going to learn? Is it going to do us any good?
Uh-huh.
Now, on a personal level, I don't do experiments where I terminate the animals, which is the scientific way of saying you put the animals down. You overdose them with anesthesia, so basically you put them to sleep. I don't do that anymore. I can't do that anymore.
Uh-huh.
Since I really gone into Reiki seriously, I'm not able to do that. I do still love doing experiments on animals, but I'm able to now make measures on them which don't require that. So the animals are free to walk around. So, for example, I can measure their heart rhythms quite easily just by putting little sensors on them on the outside that don't cause any problem, just a little electrode that clips onto a belt that they wear. So no effect on the animal, no adverse effect, but I can get a lot of data. So now I do experiments on live animals that are living normal lives, and that fits in with my Reiki life.
Oh, good. Well, that's wonderful to hear. And it's interesting that I immediately jumped to the improvement in technology about, like, computer chips and sensors and so on, that you don't have to operate and put a thing inside of them on their heart, for instance.
Exactly, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is a really exciting time because of all the technology. We can apply all the technology to things like Reiki.
And we can
really use the, you know, the top science, the top technology to study Reiki. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. That's wonderful to hear. And when you say that you're now starting to work with human beings in your experiment, do they use the same sort of sensors and so on as you would on a rat?
Well, I'm using similar sensors that I do on the horses.
Uh-huh,
on the humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Well, I think that it's going to be fascinating because I feel maybe technology and our own willingness to be open to research and to and to not be afraid that the mystery will disappear because we've done research. And I think maybe that's one of my unconscious fears. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, and I think that's funny you should say that because to me it's the opposite. To me, science increases the mystery because you get more and more questions and it gets more and more mysterious. And things happen, you get results that you never dream of. So I think science opens up the mystery rather than diminishing it.
Well, that is a great place to end. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. We'll be back next week with more of Anne Baldwin and her experiments and her wisdom. This is Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.